Hi, this is Alina and Megan, and you're listening to Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, where we dive into all things health, wellness, and fitness.
We are two certified athletic trainers, personal trainers, and nutrition coaches who met and graduated together from the University of Arkansas. And we want to do this podcast to spread our joy about treating our bodies well through nutrition, exercise, and knowledge.
On this episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, we welcome physical therapist, PRC, and strength and conditioning coach, Mike DeMille. Mike DeMille went to Springfield College and played baseball during his time there while also earning his physical therapy degree. This time really shaped him athletically and clinically, and we talk about that on this episode. While playing baseball, he was introduced to PRI, which we also talk about on this episode, and how it helped him as an athlete, but also today with his current practice. He currently owns Divergent PT, which is a physical therapy clinic in the Massachusetts area. In this episode, we talk a lot about strength and conditioning, general traditional physical therapy, and postural restoration, and how Mike has merged everything, all of those modalities, into his current day practice. We know you're going to love this episode. On Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast today, we welcome Mike DeMille. So nice to have you on.
Yeah, so happy to be here. Super excited for this interview.
Yeah, so Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself, just some background.
Yeah, so I'm a physical therapist. I'm in Massachusetts. I'm from Massachusetts, so I grew up not far from where my clinic is, and I've always been a baseball player, which is how I found PT. So all the way back from like 11, 12 years old is when I had my original overuse, like pitching, arm, rotator cuff related injury. And I went to a PT clinic and got better. And then from there on out, knew that I wanted to do PT in some capacity. So when I got through high school and going into college, I was basically looking to find a school where I could both play baseball at that was the right competition level and that had a PT program. So in that process, I did some showcases. I did like some different tryouts and landed on Springfield College. So Springfield College is in Massachusetts. It was about an hour and a half from where I lived. So it was still local and it wasn't too far away. And I was able to do the accelerated 3+3 physical therapy program. So I knew I was going to school for 6 years. I knew I was going to have my PT degree at the end of it. And I knew I was going to play baseball. So I did all of that. And then in the middle of my baseball career is when I started to find PRI. So I'm really lucky where PRI, the Postural Restoration Institute, which I'm sure your listeners know, I was using a lot of the concepts and learning them as an athlete to enhance my pitching performance. And at the same time, I was going through all of my physical therapy courses. So I did all of that. And by the time I graduated, I knew a lot of people that were involved with PRI. I had met a lot of the faculty. I had gone to some of the courses. So I was really lucky and I was well positioned to take my first job. And my first job was at Pure Performance Training, which is also in Massachusetts. So everything was nice and close together. At that time, I'm sure you guys know Eric Cressy was getting into
I was going to ask if I was going to ask if that's how you found PRI, because I know that he's familiar with it.
So all these worlds are kind of intertwined. So at Springfield too, and this is a kind of an important part of the story that I usually leave out, is Pat Davidson was there as well. And he was just learning PRI. But he was at Springfield and with the strength conditioning program. And I was at Springfield and with the PT program. And those worlds, even though like he was taking PRI courses, physical therapy at Springfield didn't really talk about PRI. We were like adjacent to each other, but non-involved. So I didn't know Pat. And then once I graduated, we got closer and started to talk more and hang out more. But when I was playing baseball, there was an athletic trainer who was also our strength conditioning coach. His name's Sam Sturgis, and he was kind of a mentor to me and has been a mentor for a number of years. He did an internship with Eric Cressy, and he had Pat as a professor. So Sam was the trainer for the baseball team. I was an athlete on the baseball team. Sam and I developed a close relationship, and we stayed in contact after he graduated. He went to work at Pure Performance Training. So I was going to courses with him, a lot of them PRI courses and related courses. So we had a good relationship. And by the time I graduated, the facility that he was working at, Pure Performance, was looking for a physical therapist. And I was very well positioned with my past experiences from spending time with Sam to slide right into this role as a PT that was going to work with personal trainers and strength coaches who was also, you know, understood the language of PRI. Yeah. So it was like perfect timing. All these things came together at once. And then I was at Pure Performance for the last 3 or 4 years. And then I left this past February. And now I started my own physical therapy facility in Massachusetts. And here we are.
Congratulations. That's amazing. And I feel like just even in my own experience, it is 100% the connections that you make along the way. Like you can be learning, you know, at the best school or whatever, but really it's like just those shoulders you rub edges with. So that's amazing. Well, congrats on opening your own place. That's pretty cool.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So many like big names, actually. I went to Cortland and a lot of big names came out of Springfield. And it's just kind of funny because it's a pretty, not that big known spot. It's pretty small,
right?
But the strength and conditioning program there, I've heard so much about just in general, Massachusetts, Springfield College. You mentioned Pat Davidson. I know my friend Nancy went there. She's a strength and conditioning person. It's just interesting. How was the education at Springfield? Do you feel like you really enjoyed your program? And is there something different about what they're doing at Springfield College compared to other places for strength and conditioning and also physical therapy?
Yeah. So the connections that you make there can be incredibly valuable. And I would say people go to Springfield usually for the athletic history and like the exercise science and allied health professions background. It has a really good reputation for that. And I think too, like, you know, it's kind of funny. I was talking to this about a client yesterday. A lot of the people that are failed athletes end up being the best coaches and PTs and whatever. And because it's a Division III program, it's not a Division I program, you get a lot of those like fringy, you know, they might have been really good in high school, but they might not have the size or like, you know, the fastball velocity in a baseball player's case to go to the next level. So they can go to a place like Springfield because they might be really interested in what they're going to study in school, and they might still want to be competitive, or they might still want to lift weights or like, you know, do some of those things, but they can't do it at like a Division I level where they'd be dedicating their entire life to it. So I think you get this really good combination of people that are still athletic and still motivated, but also really appreciate the science of what's going on behind things. And everyone that I met at Springfield, like Pat is a really good example, or like a friend of mine, Tyler Tanaka, played volleyball at Springfield, and now he has his own clinic in Oregon. And like, I could think of so many people that I met. Yeah, you know Tyler?
I think well, I do.
I live in Washington, and that name sounds really familiar.
Convergence PT. I talk to him all the time. He's brilliant.
Yeah. Is he in Portland?
He's in Eugene, Oregon.
Okay.
So Tyler and I have been really good friends for a long time, and people ask me this, and it is not a coincidence at all that he's Convergence and I'm Divergence.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so we're both PRC'd, but we were 1 year away from each other. And basically when we were at Springfield, so this was kind of, I was going to get into this. It's a perfect time to get into it.
Yeah.
If I had any gripes or things that I wish were different at Springfield, if anyone involved in the community is listening, I wish there was way more crosstalk between the strength conditioning and the physical therapy. Mm-hmm. And when I was there, I would have really benefited from more of that. So you have the exercise science building and, you know, the strength conditioning department that's on one side of campus. And then you have the allied health building where there's physical therapy, physician assistants, occupational therapy, that's like literally on the other side of campus. And then there's this big division in there. And like the division is both geographical and metaphorical. Like there wasn't a lot of collaboration like I wish there would have been. And, you know, myself and Tyler, and I could think of so many friends, ended up going on to fields that really intersected with exercise science, whether they're working with athletic trainers or dietitians or strength conditioning coaches. And we really would have benefited a lot from that. And I forget where I was going with this. What did you ask before? There's a reason
I was going to ask, well, she asked about like how, because of just how Springfield is, how well is it integrated, but it sounds like it's not as integrated as you would like. But I was going to say on that note, like, obviously in your own practice, you were a former athlete, you are a physical therapist, you are a PRC, you are like, I saw your Instagram and like, obviously you're very big on like the barbell lifts or like, you know, heavy training. So, how are you, like, what is your approach with your clients? I guess is kind of my question. How are you melding strength and conditioning, PRI, and like traditional physical therapy?
That is a really good question. And that's like a, that is still an issue that I don't want to say it's controversial, but people don't agree on how to do it. Actually, like I literally have the notes behind me of, we did a, in my little Solidify program, which is like a PRI masterclass mentorship thing. We had our fitness talk and how I approach fitness with PRI. We had that yesterday. So we talked about that for about an hour, and those are the notes from it. But I remember when PRI offered the affiliate course, fitness integration, and I took it in Vermont, and it was an amazing course. And now they're not offering those anymore. But it's, I've seen things all over the spectrum. Like I've seen, people have come to us before because they thought they were supposed to posteriorly tilt their pelvis on a deadlift and like exhale all the way. And then they blew their back out, all the way to people that are, you know, incredibly extended, no matter what they're doing, even if it's a 90-90 hip lift. And obviously the answer is somewhere in the middle. So I would say the way I approach it is, the fitness course had this concept called red light, yellow light, and green light clients, which is basically, you know, people that can do just about anything and they'll be fine and they'll be able to recover. Mm-hmm. People that are somewhere in the middle of the rehab process, meaning they can maybe get back to 50% of what they normally would do. But if they're going to do, you know, a high bar back squat and be in a lot of extension, then they might be in trouble. And then the red light people who are in active pain and they really need a lot of help, taking away the pattern that exists in them or counteracting the pattern that exists in them for them to not have any problems. And I would say I treat my clients the same way. So when they come in, you know, we're going to give them the most recovery-based, you know, a lot of points of contact, low threshold, three-dimensional triplanar exercises. But I would not feel good if I didn't leave them in more of this green light position, where whatever activities they'd like to do, even if it's not weightlifting, that they're able to extend and be in an inhaled position and work in the sagittal plane and produce a lot of force, and to be able to do that without their pattern then inhibiting them and giving them pain and problems. So yeah. It's like, it's really important to understand that we have patterns. We can go into our patterns a lot, and they sometimes contribute to pain. But being out of your pattern, or I guess being unpatterned or having movement variability 100% of the time and not going back into your pattern and then using it for your advantage, that's also not advisable. You need to be able to go back into your pattern, have some ownership of it, be able to handle the intensity that comes along with that and not injure yourself, which is a I don't know a lot of people that are doing it completely that way right now. And, you know, in the course that I teach and in conversations I have with people, and when I go out to PRI courses, I really try to make that point that it's really important that we get to that place.
Yeah. Well, sorry, Alina, did you have a question?
No, I was just thinking about like with PRI, they always do talk about like, okay, sympathetic is not bad. It's just that you need to know how to get out of it. And I think people take it too far. Like when you're working out, when I'm working out, I'm not thinking that I should be in a calm parasympathetic state. My body should be neutral. I know that I'm not staying neutral and I'm just trying to get a great workout in, a good sweat, whatever I need to do. I feel like a pump sometimes, whatever I need. But I think that that's also an important aspect. It's kind of what you were just saying to, you know,
something and, I was going to,
No, go ahead.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Sorry. You got me super excited. Go
ahead. No, that's okay. Well, you got me excited because I don't know if I told you, I'm in PT school right now. So I go to Baylor and it's their hybrid program. So I'm almost done with my first year. I just got done with an exam this morning, actually. But yeah, so one of the things that like, obviously we are learning, and I mean, I knew this before, like working out as an athletic trainer and a strength coach, but, people's green lights or people's red lights, I should say, are, it's subjective. It's like per person, like one person who is more like fear avoidant versus someone who is like, just wants to get back into the game. Like they might even like, as an athlete, they're going to like say, oh yeah, no, I'm fine. You know? So I was just wondering how you approach like the psychosocial aspect of it, of your clients. And I mean, there's ways that you can sort of tap into the nervous system, like get people more calm through like PRI exercises and stuff. But I was just wondering like what your approach is, if you have like a specific approach.
Yeah. So I think PRI does a really good job of explaining this, like Alina said. And the problem comes from either someone who hasn't taken any in-person courses before, or has taken maybe one or two courses before. and then has this discourse with all of their friends or people that have opposing opinions on the internet. And that's where messages really get diluted. Because if you were to talk to anybody on PRI faculty or PRCs, their intention is not to put fear into any of their clients or give people nocebic messages or like do any of these things that we know were to be harmful. But if you're looking on social media, or if you're finding out information for the first time, or if you want to see something that's really gripping, you're not going to go to the good, healthy, consistent messaging when you see a client over a 16-week period. You're going to see an Instagram post or a video or something that's 10 seconds long and shows a huge test retest, and then you'll get obsessed with that like very tangible piece that you can see, and then you'll think that's what all PRI is, or that's all of what physical therapy is, or you know, whatever it might be. So what I like that PRI talks about is the four stages of competency. So unconscious incompetency, conscious competency, you know, so on and so forth. And the one where people usually get stuck, or the one that people think about the most, is the conscious incompetency. And this happens with my clients all the time. If you find out that there's something that you can't do and you don't understand why you can't do it, or you see yourself in the mirror and think that your posture is bad or something's misaligned, and you're able to attach a very tangible reason to your pain, it's going to be very easy for you to think about that. So as I'm taking people through the end parts of their rehabilitation, and it's easy for us because we also do personal training with our physical therapy clients once they're discharged. So it's all one thing. There's not this division in their minds or our minds. But as we take people to that phase, we really want them to be able to not be concerned with either their body position or muscles that they feel in an acute way, and still be able to do the activities that they want to do. So like, for example, if someone's doing a deadlift and they start to feel their lower back and they get really afraid, so then they don't want to deadlift again and they want to do, you know, the hemi bridge again because that exercise felt safe, but now this one feels dangerous, that can be a real problem. And there's nothing wrong with doing hemi bridges. There's nothing wrong with doing deadlifts. But being afraid to do either one or thinking that you can only do one can be a problem.
I think it also goes back to the specific person and the client. Like when I see people that are more top-down driven, they're more likely, I think, not always, but a lot of times they can have a harder time with certain movements if they're torsioned, if they've been through a lot of different things and their body cannot sense. And then you give them these senses, and once you give it to them, their body feels safer. The same way that somebody who's maybe more bottom-up driven with just a pair of shoes, they might feel great. So it's just kind of interesting because it you could be giving one human a deadlift and maybe they're more in that pattern, and that's something that, you know, can induce more anxiety, et cetera. And another human might not have any problems with it, but it's also depending on their past history, their trauma, et cetera. So I think like that psychosocial aspect is more about past history than like anything else, but I'm biased in my opinion on it. I think people don't just develop a fear. I feel like they've had a reason to have that fear, whether it's pain or trauma or whatever their past history has right. involved. I don't think you just become anxious or fearful out of no reason. I mean, I also believe there's a root cause to everything. So, and I think a lot of like PRI practitioners would agree with that too, but also physical therapists would agree with that. It doesn't matter what your cert is, but yeah, it's really, really interesting. And I also think like the talk, like how we speak to our clients is really important. So tell me a little bit about like, what do you say to your patients, clients, whatever you address them, that you think helps them get over that little hump?
Yeah. Well, I try to describe the science behind what I'm doing as little as possible. You know what is really difficult, and you probably experienced this too, when you start to get direct referrals and people that have been either learning about PRI or learning about, you know, anything that's related, any school of physical therapy before they get to you, that can be particularly challenging. And I really need to be careful about what I say with those people, because they might be very impressionable. They might be in a lot of pain. They might have, like you said, you know, a history with a very specific fear that it's kind of dangerous to talk about. Versus if I'm finding someone who's local, who saw us on Google and has no idea what anything is, right. but they just have hip pain, then I might be able to, you know, not be as careful with what I say. But I would say in both cases, if there might be information that I'm withholding specifically because I might be worried about how it would be interpreted or you know, taken in by someone's nervous system. And if you look at a lot of the pain science research, depending on when someone has acute pain, there is a window that people can be particularly impressionable in when their body's experiencing pain, that their brain would not perceive the same information in the same way if it was, you know, after the pain had been more chronic. So you have to be really careful about when people are coming to you and what you say. So to that point, like we try to be very careful about not giving anyone any thoughts that could impede them from meeting their progress. And you made a good point earlier too, with like people are top-down driven and might impact the activities that you give them.
Yeah.
And it brings up a really important question of, well, what activities do people need to be able to do? Because on the one hand, if someone comes in to see you, just getting out of pain should not be the goal. Like you need to be able to handle some sort of stimulus, some sort of allostasis, even though you're out of pain. And people get discharged from physical therapy all the time, but don't truly finish their plan of care because they might be vulnerable to re-injuring. But at the same time, you know, if someone has had, you know, a traumatic, painful experience, which a lot of chronic pain can be traumatic, I'm not going to force them to do an exercise that they don't want to do just to show them that now like they're over it. That also wouldn't make any sense. But there's also a line in the middle where I've had some clients where I know that a big part of them getting over the hump might be doing something that we both know that they're afraid to do, but we both know that they can do. So there's all these like little decisions that you have to make. And I oftentimes say like the things that are the most uncomfortable in a physical therapy setting, just like in everybody's lives. A lot of times the things that feel the most uncomfortable might be the most important to do. Mm-hmm. You don't just want to be giving people activities for no reason, just to show, you know, just to show them something that isn't actually important.
Yeah. No, it has to be salient to like their life, but also, you know, the goal that they may or may not be aware of what they need. Mm-hmm. Is it okay? Can we talk about the whiteboard behind you, or is that like classified?
Yeah. No,
I've been curious about it ever since you mentioned it being notes. So obviously we are on a podcast. We will not be putting this on YouTube, but if you could just kind of go over kind of what's going on your notes on this is for your course, you said, or?
Yeah, for sure. So I do this program that I call Solidify, which is a PRI mentorship. So usually people that have taken a couple PRI courses before and either didn't feel like they fully understood the information or might not have a group that they can go back to and talk about the information with, and they wish they were more clear on it. They can join our online group. It's 10 weeks. We usually go through one PRI course at a time with some specialty, you know, courses mixed in there, like the fitness course. We just talk about questions that they might have, points of clarification that they want, really solidifying the information that they already have and being able to apply those ideas more. Mm-hmm. So this was the fitness week. So the part all the way to the left on this whiteboard, this is from Pat Davidson's book, Rethinking the Big Patterns. So these are like the different chapters that he has. I think it's like 12 or 13 different patterns that he uses. Mm-hmm. And we opened up the conversation with, if you look at how PRI categorizes their exercises, it's usually broken down by muscle. So right glute max, left adductor, left hamstring. And then it's broken down into position. And when I do my program writing, when people are early on in the process, and I might be trying to work on getting them neutral, getting them full range of motion, and getting their adduction and abduction lift scores to be as close to a 5 out of 5 as we can, when getting to the 5 out of 5, restoring the movement options, restoring the range of motion, and getting out of pain becomes less of the focus, I'll start to write my programs with these patterns in mind. So you're not doing a left hamstring exercise anymore. You might be doing a hip dominant exercise, or you're not doing a lower trap exercise anymore. You might be doing a horizontal pull. So I'll start to change the way that I write the programs. And a lot of times it'll be both at the same time. You know, the first 20 minutes might be a repositioning warm up. And then we might get into more of the higher intensity activity, because with a lot of the PRI exercises, there's a lot of resistance, but there usually isn't external load. There's a lot of internal load. There isn't always external load. And for activities that might require a high degree of force production, you probably need external load. And it can still be triplanar. That doesn't mean it always has to be sagittal plane. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of our clients, for the goals that they want, whether it's strength, body composition, whatever, we might need to work in the sagittal plane with a decent amount of external load. So if you look at the top right of the board, and obviously the people won't be able to see, but I'll explain. when my clients get to a point where their pain is under control, or if they regress to a point where, or if they progress to a point where the pain that they're feeling might be normal for their unique situation. So obviously having zero pain all the time is not expected and not a good goal. But when pain is no longer interfering in their life, mm-hmm. I really encourage my clients to then make goals that have nothing to do with pain. If you look back at more of the pain science research, so this is like the Laura Mormozley, David Butler, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of work.
Yeah.
If you look at people that have chronic pain, one of the issues can be that they never verbalize any goals that yeah. don't have to do with pain. So if you have this window where pain is less of a factor, you should then make a goal that is related to endurance, like running a 5K, and not mm-hmm. running a 5K with no pain, like a performance related goal, or, you mm-hmm. know, a resistance training related goal. And I'm biased because I, you know, lift weights and like I do bodybuilding style training. So that's really what I like to do. But mm-hmm. whatever those goals mean to my clients, I really push them to make a goal that doesn't have to do with the pain that they have.
Now, put their focus on it. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. That's awesome. And doing that by itself can give people a lot of progress towards not returning to this painful state because they're changing their identity. They're mm-hmm. not the person that's trying to get out of pain anymore. They might be the person that's trying to run a 5K in under however many minutes, or, you know, lift this amount of weights in this amount of time. And what we found too, and this has to do with kind of the culture of this facility that we want, is some people that have been in pain for a really long time have never thought about goals. In which case, I'm going to help them find out what these goals might be with them. It mm-hmm. might be activities that they've never tried before, never thought that they were the right person to do these things. So we might show someone different activities that could be fun for them. Then they're making new goals, and then they're getting further and further down this injury prevention pathway. And then the last part of the whiteboard is just a sample program of how I would blend the goals that people have and, you know, the patterns that we talked about together. So it's just a sample program of what.
Cool. Doing. That's awesome.
Really different, I mean, really interesting.
It's different, but it's so funny because I feel like, duh, you
yeah,
know?
It like makes sense, right?
You're verbalizing things that like we should all be doing. And I'm definitely, yeah, that's just got me thinking as a student, like just how I really want to be working with my future clients. Like I'm going to be in clinicals starting in January. So I'm definitely taking all this to heart. So thank you.
No, it's
perfect. I'm glad.
Very awesome because you've basically taken, I know you're a PRC and you've kind of really meshed it well with training. And I think that is very, PRI isn't made for trainers, but you can take the concepts and,
yeah.
And utilize the concepts and understand that PRI is made for rehab. And I think that you're right. doing a really good job of that. Whereas you see things on the internet all the time where it's actually not being done well by most people, but you are such a great example of how you can take the concepts of PRI and just utilize these asymmetries, these patterns, and also get people to feel really good in their body. And once they feel better, to train better. So I think that's really cool because it's a little more rare.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Very cool. So you are married to Erin and we've yeah. had her on our podcast before. So can we talk a little bit about how, when you come home from work, do you get like a really good dinner meal?
Oh yeah. And I think I did an interview with somebody else recently and I made a joke about this. So he's talking to Connor and Garrett, the two PTs that I work with. Uh-huh. And when I get in the car on the way home, if I'm at a red light and I'm looking at my Instagram stories, I'm seeing like this in real time trailer, this commercial for the dinner that I'm about to go home and eat.
Well, that's awesome.
It's gonna be like in the oven or like Erin might be talking about it or like it's literally the best, like preparing it. It's so funny. It's like a food network, but then I'm going home through the food network and then I get to eat the food.
Oh my God.
That's awesome. So you guys are a power couple.
Yeah.
I do dishes though. I promise. I do. That's my role. I do dishes.
So that's what I was going to ask. One, do you ever cook?
Good question. You know, I'm sad to say, so when I was at Springfield, I minored in nutrition.
Oh.
And like I took a bunch of nutrition courses. So it's always been an interest of mine. And, you know, that was one of the things that Erin and I first talked about, what we connected over.
Sure.
But because she is so good at nutrition, I haven't had to flex those muscles in a long time. And not only that, when we first met, I definitely told her that I didn't know anything about nutrition and played dumb and told her I like needed help with grocery shopping. And you know, it was kind of my in. But you
well,
know,
now you're married. So like.
That is so funny. And then my other question for you was like, so she's soon to be an RD. She's also brilliant. And we've had her on and I've talked to her a bunch about different things, hormones, tons of different things, nutrition. Yep. How cool is that when you come home and you can have these like intellectual conversations with somebody who's not necessarily in your field, but right. the layover is pretty big. So do you guys talk a lot? And if so, like, do you share clients? Do you go to her for advice on things? What do you?
Right. So we certainly refer to her all the time. You know, if any of my clients have any nutrition related needs, I always know the perfect person. Right. I'd also say the overlap is really interesting. So Tyler Tanaka he recently spoke to Erin's mentorship group that she runs. Mm-hmm. And like my mentorship group was able to go, and it was kind of this crossover thing. Awesome. And he talked about how the principles of PRI and the asymmetry of the body can affect digestion. And then Erin was basically able to interject with all of her nutrition students on like specific parts of the descending colon and how it's different on the right and on the left, and people with GERD, what side they have to lie on, and all these things. So we talk about, you know, the specific nuts and bolts physiology a lot, but I'd say where we talk about it even more is in the behavioral side of things. Mm. Like, you know, similarities that we see with our clients in terms of progress that they're making, barriers that they might have, you know, changing their identity. If someone has issues with changing their nutrition culture at home, their food culture, those behaviors might be difficult to confront, just like someone who has pain and is trying to, you know, figure out how they got into the situation, factors that they can control, factors that they can't control, you know, how their behavior lines up with their goals. So we have a lot of interesting conversations with that as well. So Erin's in her clinicals right now. Then she'll, you know, take her RD exam. She'll become an RD. She's probably going to continue her private practice, which is already ongoing right now. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised if after that, in the first year or two, she's going to be taking some PRI courses and might even go for her PRT. Because before she was doing nutrition, she was a strength coach. And like, she did CrossFit for a number of years, mm-hmm. and she was a really high level athlete. So she's been a personal trainer before. And she took, she took respiration with me. And I don't remember if Tyler was there. I think Tyler might've been there, and Mike Cantrell taught it. And it was like really interesting. And we got to share some ideas, but.
That's awesome. Really, I didn't know that was her. Like, she was also a trainer, but that, I think it probably makes a nutritionist better at their job to understand that aspect too. The same way for us, I think it makes me better at my job to understand nutrition and to understand the things that come along with it, hormones, et cetera. And same for PTs, to have a layover in training or have a layover in nutrition, it always makes you better.
Absolutely.
Very cool. Well, so if people want to work with you, how can they find you? And then we have one more question for you after that.
Yep. So we've got our website, Divergence PT and Wellness. That's the easiest place to find us. Just reach out to us there, email, telephone, whatever. We also have our Instagram page, which is also Divergence PT and Wellness. Where you can learn about the clinic there. If you want to learn about the Solidify program, we post about that all the time. I post about Solidify on my personal Instagram. Mm-hmm. So that's Mike DeMille, DPT. And then we have a section on our Divergence website that talks about Solidify and what the program offers and how to apply. So you can find that there. Awesome. So whether you're a client that's looking to see us, or if you're a PT or a personal trainer that's looking to learn more about PRI, the website and the Instagrams are the best place to go.
Amazing.
Sweet.
We'll link all those show notes in our show notes. Megan, you can do the honors of our last question.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So this is a question that we ask all of our guests, and I'm sure that this one will be a great answer from you. So what is something you do every day, or at least the majority of days, to move your brain, move your body, or both?
I didn't do my research before. I didn't know there was going to be an opening.
Erin should have told you.
I know, and I definitely listened to her interview then. All right, what do I do every day to move my body, or both? So I do, and I think I'm like, I don't know if a lot of people still do this. I still do Pat Davidson's mass programs. So at the gym, in this, you know, or at the clinic, I usually call it a gym. But at our facility, when I started it, we don't see any clients from noon to 2 p.m. every day. So it is a time for the physical therapist to train. So I'm usually doing like one of those 30-30 workouts, one of those 20-40 workouts, like one of those intense timed Pat Davidson style things. I still do those like basically year round. And I have that time in the middle of the day to make sure that I get it done and I won't book any clients there. And, you know, I really appreciate that time. So that would probably be my answer. And most days, like, it's hard to drag myself to do it. but when it's on the schedule.
For people that have never done like Pat's workouts, I've never done those, but I've worked out with him.
Yep.
He is a beast.
I've never done any of his stuff. Well, actually, I read the majority of his book, the new one. What is it called? The newer book?
Rethinking in the Big Patterns?
Yeah.
I don't think it was that one. Is mm-hmm. that the only book he has?
I think he's coming out with books all the time. I'm not sure. But there's Mass One, Matthew, Rethinking the Big Patterns.
Well,
yeah. I could go and grab it. But anyway, I started school and when I was in the middle of reading it. So obviously I have not had time to read it. But his stuff is really awesome. So I would be interested to do one of his programs, actually.
It's hard. So I've worked out with him.
When I got my PRC, so I'm like 6 feet tall. And I had just finished PT school. I did it that first winter after I graduated. So at the end of grad school and clinicals and like basically the position that Aaron's in now, that final year, I was like not lifting weights. I was not strong because my baseball career was done too. So it was in this weird middle period. And then that spring, so after I get the PRC, I was lucky enough to be invited to Ben House's retreat center when it was in Costa Rica. And we basically had to do these 20-40 workouts. It was a Cajun. So it was a 3-round 20-40. So 20 seconds on, 40 seconds off. And there was like maybe 18 people that went. And then there was a draft of like all the people that were going to the course. And Pat was one of the team captains. I think I was the last pick in the whole thing, or like at least in the last round. Cause there was like James Serby was there and Kyle Dobbs was there. And like all these, you know, huge, strong people were there. But after I went to that retreat, it just kind of kicked off me doing these programs and I've been doing them ever since. And I think I'm literally 30 pounds heavier than when I got my PRC in 2017.
Wow.
Cause like when you finish an athletic career, you don't know what the heck to do with yourself.
Yeah.
I don't play competitive baseball anymore and you don't necessarily, you know, need to have a ton of muscle mass to be good at baseball. But now it's like this thing that I can stay competitive with and it's consistent and it's really fun.
Oh, that's awesome. That is really cool. Well, we loved having you on. This is such a great interview. We're excited to get this out so people can contact you and learn more about you. So,
likewise, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Mike.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast. Join in every week as we release new episodes.
Subscribe or leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts. If you have questions or topics to cover, please email moveyourbb@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @moveyourbb.